Coming up on the next BMW Motorrad Ride and Talk podcast, sitting down with Hans A. Muth, one of the most celebrated designers in the history of BMW Motorrad. Take a listen. Over the years, I've had the privilege of riding BMW motorcycles all over the world. And the one thing I've come away with is that the only thing more extraordinary than the ride are the people you meet along the way. These are their stories. My name is Sean Thomas, and this is BMW Motorrad's Ride and Talk.
It is the changing of times, the changing of people. What are the status of a car today? What is the status of traveling? Motorcycles became a kind of what a car can't do anymore. Mm-hmm. Motorcycle became the individualistic mobility factor because this is the only one object which makes you free.
That was the voice of Hans A. Muth describing his process for designing the ever-evolving motorcycle platform. Hans's legacy spans 50 years and can be seen even in today's modern BMW motorcycles. Hans and I took a tour of the BMW Museum in Munich, where the very first and very latest BMW motorcycles are on display as part of their 100 years BMW Motorrad exhibit. Afterward, we sat down and talked about his spectacular career as a designer for BMW and some of the twists and turns that have brought us so many epic milestones in BMW motorcycles. All right. Well, you've done this before. You've had many interviews.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've read some of your interviews.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I have a question. I know you came to work for BMW, but I'm not actually sure if you came to work for BMW or if they came to work for you.
No, I came to BMW because I had been with Ford company since 1965.
Now, Ford in Europe?
Yes, starting with Ford of Europe, 65. In the very same year, I changed to Ford of Britain to start designing the Escort.
Ah.
And then in 1 year later, I was sent to the USA, and that was in Michigan. When I came back, I became promoted as design executive for exterior, mm-hmm. For advanced, design executive for advanced and design executive for pre-program interior. The studio interior had been in England and the advanced in Germany. And I had to fly every 2 weeks with the Gulfstream to Dunton, to England. And that was the airport had been Stansted, you know. And this I did till 1971. And in 71, that was a quite decisive year. My wife asked me, by the way, aren't in southern Germany also some car companies? Mm-hmm. And I said, of course, BMW, for instance. How about we change there? Because all our friends had been in Bavaria.
Aha.
And the weather in that kind of area, Cologne, was awful. It was raining, you know. Mm. And this was the opinion of my wife. My opinion had been get the information that BMW started to building up motorcycles again. It was in 1969.
Hmm.
And then I said, I will change because they need design.
It was an interesting revolutionary time for motorcycles in this time, yeah? Because 1969 seems to have been the resurgence of motorcycles, you know, where it sort of transitioned back from the rebellious rider back to the family oriented, you know, this is, you meet the nicest people on a Honda, you know, remember this advertisement in the 60s.
I still have this advertising from the Saturday Evening Post cutout, you know. Mm. The motorcycle in general was the mainly mobility during the wartime because the cars had been all taken away by the army.
Ah.
So the whole mobility had been on 2 wheels, on 3 wheels, you know, with a sidecar. Now, after the war, there was a problem because the people like to have cars again and not motorcycles.
Yeah.
And this was when BMW came up with the Isetta because they didn't have anything because the cars had been fabricated in the eastern part of Germany, not in Milbertshofen.
Hmm.
So they started with the Isetta and the 600 and the 700. And then in 69, and there had been motorcycles, but mostly for police and for officers. And then the motorcycle came up end of the 60s.
Hmm.
People use it as a hobby bike.
Hmm.
They have been fed up with the cars, you know, because they like to get out and, you know, all the stories of freedom and so on. And then I asked, I need a contact.
Hmm.
And my old client, I painted car brochures and posters and so on.
Yeah.
It was a very nice cooperation. And I phoned this guy and I said, I need a contact at BMW. Can you help me?
Ah.
And within 2 weeks, I get a date.
Now, when you came to BMW, you were coming from cars to cars at the time, were you not? I mean, you secretly were talking in your mind about motorcycles, but you didn't come here to be a motorcycle. They didn't hire you for this.
Well, I had in mind to ask whether I can design a motorcycle.
Yeah.
But when I came to BMW, this was a board member.
Yeah.
And I came in and we said, hello, hello. And he said, you want a coffee? And I said, yes. And he said, Mr. Mood, do you like interiors?
Yeah.
And I said, yes. Then you are doing it.
Wow.
You became chief designer interior.
That's a very simple way.
Very simple way. You know, it needed 20 minutes to become chief designer interior. It needed 10 minutes to become a chief designer motorcycles.
I'm thinking about you coming to BMW at a very interesting time because the building that we're sitting in right now, the museum, and the four-cylinder building, right, which is right next door, all of this was concept at the time, just being built. And you're coming on board right when what is now sort of the modern day BMW headquarters was coming to be.
So I waited about 2 weeks to get myself acquainted. And I asked one of the exterior guys, and I said, by the way, where is the motorcycle development? He said, right above. So during lunchtime, I went up and Hans-Günther von der Marwitz, he was the general manager of motorcycle development.
Mm-hmm.
And the door was partially open, and I opened it and said, Mr. von der Marwitz? He said, yes, you? I said, I'm Hans Amut. What are you doing? I said, I'm right
right downstairs.
Downstairs and doing the interiors. Yeah, what you want? And I said, I have a question. Yes? I said, who is responsible for the for the design of your motorcycle? And he asked me, you like motorcycles? Yes. You run motorcycle? Yes. Then you're doing it from now on.
Wow.
Now, he has been a Prussian, and I'm a Prussian.
Yeah.
And the Prussians are talking very straight and in short terms.
It's direct.
And that was it.
Yeah.
So I had a double job.
So you were doing cars and bikes at the time then?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the R90S in particular, you couldn't have known at the time that that bike would be the icon that it became.
No. But I learned it. You know, I was... then I had been asked to participate on some meetings, and the first design I did was some little items on the series models, you know, the Slash 5.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you a little story. When I entered BMW, I bought a motorcycle, an MV Agusta 750S.
Oh, wow, okay.
And I put this beside my working desk.
Yeah.
Because that was my dream bike.
Yeah. Such a
beautiful dream bikes had not been the new BMW from 1969. You know, that was a little bit sturdy and high up. You know, it looked like a cow who should move forward but wouldn't go. Now, this was ingredients to design. And then I said, my concept had been for the R90S. It's a prestige bike, 900cc. It have to have a face.
Yeah.
Because a motorcycle looking from the front is a roundel of the headlamp.
Yeah.
This is a stripe of the front engine. BMW have the advantage to have these footsteps. called boxer engine.
Yeah.
And you can recognize a BMW.
Yeah.
But I think this is not too much.
Hmm.
So for me, the face, then I looked at it and the face you have to do with a small cockpit fairing. You know, a small, sexy little cockpit fairing. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows, what's that?
Yeah.
You see the boxer engine and you see this must be a new BMW.
Hmm.
And then I started a kind of flow from the cockpit into the tank, which I modeled very softly.
Sure.
I got a little bit inspired by the MV Agusta tank because it was, you know, like an Italian lady. And then the seat and then the rear, you know. And the total flow and integrating of the different portions, I called it fly line.
Fly line. Yeah.
So I did one big concept sketch. BMW has it, by the way.
Mm.
And some sketches, I immediately went into a full-size tape drawing based on the package.
Yeah.
And directly into the 3D model.
Yeah.
And nobody came and asked me, what are you doing? Or can we, I don't know. Nobody, except the sales department. Mr. Moon, what will be the color?
Yeah.
And I said, please wait. The color for me is a separate one, but I can tell you, color is an integrated factor of design.
Yeah. Mm.
So when I finished all the clay work and we make a cast of it for the final presentation, I sit down and make myself clear what will be the color.
Hmm.
There had been the black color from the past. Black and double pinstripe white.
Yeah.
The company is BMW Blau mit Weiß. If you say it, you know.
Yeah.
Bayerische Motorenwerke, but you can say Blau mit Weiß because the blue is in this case. And the Bavarian color is just different. It's the other side.
Yeah, sure.
And I said, black and white, no. But how about black and silver?
Mm.
Because silver has a destination of future. We say, you see the silver stripe on the horizon, which is a kind of, you know, we can go there and then we'll be the paradise. And I said, okay, but it won't be a hard one.
Mm-hmm.
So side black, top white.
Yeah.
It has to have an integration.
Mm.
And I went with my ideas to the Herr Bohl company. This had been the company who delivered all the colors for the cars in Würzburg. And I went there and I told the guys in the laboratory what I like to do and what I like to have. And we worked on 1 week. And the secret had been the type of color, the way of spraying it, putting in the stove, heating it up, spray the next one, the same procedure. And then I told him which I like to have silver and which I like to have in the blackage, which hadn't been a pure black. It was a kind of designed black.
Yeah.
It had been a little bit olive in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes the black a bit more softer.
Mm.
And then we put the clear lacquer on, put it in the stove. And when it came out of the stove, it was just wow.
Wow.
And we painted the machine at Herr Bohl, and I equipped it. And there had been the presentation for the board members.
Mm.
And they looked at it, and they had been just excited.
Yeah.
Some of them had been motorcycle riders.
Mm.
They had been very much in front of motorcycle.
Yeah.
And so there was no problem.
Mm.
And the presentation had been over, but one gentleman stood there, and this was the guy who was running the Berlin factory.
Uh-huh.
And he approached me and said, you know, if I would present this in German, I would tell you in the Berlin accent.
Yeah.
But I can't do this in English.
Okay.
He came to me and said, Mr. Moot, I think what you did is just great, but you got a problem. And said, what is the problem?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to go back to the board members and tell them that you present him something which cannot manufacture. And said, what's your point? And he said, do you know how we are painting the motorcycles? Yeah. Well, I said, I can imagine. No, you can't, because what you did here, we can't do in production. And I said, I have a different ideas because I made this and I have my thinking about it. How about I come to Berlin, I make a presentation to your painters. And he said, that's a good idea, Mr. Mood. I will appreciate this very much. Okay. Next morning, 9 o'clock, I came to the manufacturing department, into the copy shop. And they had all the painters sitting there with their copy break and their cigarettes. And I had been introduced to the guy. Look at this, gentlemen. This is the one who did this problem. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
So I took out some photos I did from the machine, and I made a presentation, not for the board members, but for the painters. And then comes the final key sentence. And I said, gentlemen, I know this is different, what I'm asking you to do, but there's something you should think about it. Up till now, you had been painters. From tomorrow, you are artists. Because every motorcycle you paint will be unique. It will differ from the other one because, you know, the overlapping of the colors would be a little bit more down, or more, a little bit more silver. Then I stood 1 week more to train with them. The painters. I made a kind of masterpiece. What shall be silver? What shall be black? We tried. And after this, production was going on.
It's interesting because painting on the bikes now has become such an integral part of the motorcycle. And there was a, certainly a time before you where it was just, you make it black and put some white pinstriping on it, which is beautiful, but that's it. That's all you get. And now we have all kinds of exotic colors coming out. Just the new models that are coming out now. You just go, before you even know anything about the design or the capabilities of the motorcycle, the paint comes to you first.
Now, motorcycle to this time in the starting 70s had not been the factors like it is today. For instance, you're asking for individualism. Because I always said, mach aus ein Motorrad dein Motorrad. Do out of one motorcycle your motorcycle. And paint is the simplest way to make attention and said, this is my bike, this is my color, this is my two-wheeled girlfriend. And today, that's it. Because you can't change the technique. It's the color.
Yeah, absolutely.
To this time, Honda presented the six-cylinder engine. Silver wing?
The silver wing, yeah.
And the Silverwing stirred, of course, BMWs and saying, oh boy, what are they doing then? The question was, can BMW build such a motorcycle to BMW's quality standards and to BMW's pricing? And the answer had been no.
So in the 70s, we had the R90S, which some would argue is the first superbike before there were superbikes. But we also had another icon, the R100 RS, which is just a beautiful, elegant motorcycle that also invented the category, arguably, of sport touring. And the color, you talk about the blue. And, you know, of course, the first RS that I look at, I always think of that beautiful, light, metallic blue. Was this part of your plan as well?
Now, the Force R100 RS. Which was the full fairing. And we had a special name for it. Integral cockpit.
Integral cockpit.
And this was the same story. You know, after the R90S was running really wild, when they started to produce it, it had been 8 models a day from the R90S besides all the other. It had been just the opposite. And this was in the same time when the oil crisis we had. And when at Frankfurt Motor Show, also pre-entered the little 3 as a 2002 with a turbo. And the turbo has down on the front skirt down there, these BMW colors reversed. You know, that when you look into the car mirror, you can read it.
Yeah, sure.
And that was just terrible. In the oil crisis, BMW are presenting a speedy motorcycle and a speedy turbo car.
Yeah.
It was just, you know.
Yeah, maybe that's such good timing.
Anyway. And then the motorcycle development had the same promise as Mr. Mood. The R90S is running so well, so we are asked to do something on top. And what we can do is put 100cc on top of it. So we have a 100, not a 900, but a 1,000.
Yeah.
And I said, and the rest? Yeah, Mr. Mood. And I said, it's very interesting. We are always doing machines for touring, for sports touring. But how about we are doing a real touring one? You know, a kind of aero touring. But because also BMW has a big clientele of police, of governmental requirements.
Yeah.
This had been and is a big, big portion of business. And the police always asked bought motorcycles, but BMW equipped them with fairings they can buy from England. We are thinking of a full fairing bike.
Yeah.
I said, okay with me. But we like to maybe use one of the bike we can buy. And I said, no way with me. But we shall go over to England to see the Avon company.
Yeah.
So we went to England. It was very nice. I looked at it and the Avon people, really charming, charming people.
Yeah.
But on the flight back, I said, we are doing it ourselves.
Yeah.
What they are doing is, this is a fairing, you know, with hard edges, with you put a cater over the sharp brakes. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's not.
Yeah.
We will do our own.
Yeah.
And I started sit down and also doing 3-4 sketches, put it on a tape drawing and into the model.
Yeah.
And I started also, and I said, this motorcycle needs a kind of philosophy. And I started to create the man-machine philosophy, which means a motorcycle which is aerodynamical becomes so stable, the rider shouldn't take care of to keep it. It's running. So he can enjoy what BMW says, Freude am Fahren, having fun on the ride or something like that. This is a BMW. And so the more stability this motorcycle offers, the more the rider can concentrate and enjoys the only reason to sit on the motorcycle, to enjoy the ride. So I designed, there was marketing, there was no requirements for marketing. In my whole time, in these years I have been active, no marketing man ever came to me and said, Mr. Mood, please, we want this and this and this. So I designed my thing, and the only one thing what I have to bother was the big, big headlamp. But Bosch couldn't offer us any better. We like to have a top light. So I had to come over. And this was the reason when we putting the glass, this you see the red lines?
Yeah, the lines, yeah.
Everybody asked, "How, Mr. Mood, how about the red lines?" And I made jokes and I said, you know, when you really get hungry, you put your sandwich on it and the sun, you know, and it will grill it for you. No, it was to close down this big fish eye.
Yeah, sure.
When we presented this motorcycle to the TÜV is the governmental who has to rate your model whether it will be safe.
Ah, okay.
So, and the TÜV came and said, it's all very nice, but this sharp edges, no. And because this Integral cockpit will be manufactured in a kind of a hot-pressed manufacturing way, which is a new way, I could add on a safety radius. So all these sharp, there hadn't been no sharp edges. Everything had to work. And then the TÜV came and said, You know what? You get a product advantage because every new pool fairing,
yeah,
which will be designed by anybody, have to have this radio.
Ah, you set the standard.
I set the standard. And you couldn't do in the same manufacturing way as it had been done before.
Yeah.
Then comes the color.
Hmm.
And to this time, as I just mentioned, had been the safety years, the safety awareness of cars. And this also slipped over to motorbikes.
Yeah.
And in England, there had been a poster which showed you a motorcycle in the front, you know, with a lamp and the front wheel.
Yeah.
No boxer engines. And there was a pencil laid over. And the headlining says, it needs a pencil to wipe you out. And I discussed this and he said, I don't know what we can do about it of safety.
Yeah.
And I said, we can do something. Mm-hmm. We can do it with the color.
Yeah.
Because when you have a glass color, you never see a bold color. You always see the reflections from the sky and from the ground.
Sure.
Sitting in the car, you can't really see what is coming there.
Hmm.
When we are doing it in a color like silver and in silver semi-flat, there is no reflection. You see the bold color, and because of the R90S from the front view, it's an object.
Yeah.
Then we will have the effect. A car driver can look into his mirror and say, oh, there's something coming towards me.
Sure.
And this was matching with another problem from the manufacturing way. Because the single parts of the integral cockpit had been quite huge.
Yeah.
And in production, there had been some little, dot points in it.
Yeah.
And BMW had a problem with their quality standards. So they had to also, we can't use that, we can't use that. And he said, we have a problem. And I said, try the flat silver color. And the flat silver color covered all these little dots.
Nah.
So we covered 2 points, two points of requirements.
Yeah.
The safety.
Safety, right.
And the production.
Perfect.
Now, in Murnau, this is Direction Alps. It's a big hotel.
Yeah.
And the international press was invited. And in the night, I heard this and said, oh boy, it's raining, it's raining.
Yeah.
And the very next day, it had been raining cats and dogs.
Yeah.
And I had been sitting with the engineering together, and there was all the journalists, you know, with the helmet, and they like to run down, but because of the rain, they didn't like to go. So the press guy from motorcycles approached us, and I said, we got a big problem. The journalists like to run.
Yeah.
But with the rain, what shall we do? Boom. We designed a full-size fairing. What do you think about we did it for?
Yeah.
Just hop on it and out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first guy who came back had been a Belgian journalist.
Yeah.
And he stopped. He put the helm down, put his fingers on the shoulders and said, just be sec. I'm dry. This had been the selling point.
Yeah, what a perfect
that
way.
That was the image.
Yeah, it was a perfect way to
it
demonstrate
the
bike.
It was a confirmation what we did.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Fantastic. There's one other icon that we need to talk about, and it's another machine that you could not have had any idea would come so popular, and now it's become the cornerstone of BMW Motorrad today. And that starts with a G.
The GS?
Yes.
The GS? The Gentleman Scrambler?
Yeah, the Gentleman Scrambler.
Yeah. Well, this is really a story. I don't think, I can't know a company who has this little cuckoo's egg in their nest.
Mm-hmm.
It was in autumn 1978, and a marketing guy approached me, and he said, Mr. Mood, we have to do something. Nobody is working anymore. Nobody is enthusiastic. And I said, I don't know, we are working here. Look around. I said, what's going on? Shall I know something which I don't know up till now? And he said, Mr. Mood, do you know that the motorcycle business is just on the edge? And everybody is just sitting there and keeping one hand on the telephone and the other on their seat. we have to do something. And I looked out of the window and saw my parked Range Rover. And said, why don't we build up a Range Rover-type motorcycle? And the guy said, that's a good idea. How would you like to do it? I think, well, we take the R65. We put everything down except the tank, because the tank tool is expensive.
Yeah.
A kind of related front fork we received from the test department, because the test department supported all the private off-road drivers.
Oh, okay.
And I made some sketches, and I'm going direct into full size. There had been no official asking. There was no official project. There was no budget.
Wow.
At this time, we didn't talk all this talkings what people talk today. You know, the flame had been inside, and we carried responsibility. We had enthusiasm, and we had been loyalty to the company. And when I saw the 3D model coming up, it was so small. And I said, boy, you know, maybe we have difficulties, you know, to see what is this motorcycle.
Yeah.
So I said, it's okay. The small tank is in line with a motorcycle which goes off-road. You are more standing in the footpegs instead of sitting. And I said, how about I will focus on the boxer engine. The boxer engine is the red working heart of a BMW motorcycle.
Yeah.
So I painted the engine, the boxer engine, and the drivetrain in red. The tank and the side battery covers. And I said a kind of greenish metallic, because it should say, I'm going not on the street, I'm going off-road. There had been always a kind of in-between presentations. And I put the motorcycle and just put it there. On a wall. The board members came in, and I knew that three of them had been active motorcyclists, always very interested.
Yeah.
And I made my presentation, but I see that all the eyes switched over to this thing. And after the presentation, he said, Mr. Moot, what did you do there? And I said, gentlemen, I tried another kind of motorcycle for our younger clients. And he said, gentlemen, oh, wow, that's interesting. It's interesting. What shall we do with it? And then I said, how about you are putting it into the engineering? And they did it.
Nice.
Now, in 1979, I think it was April, I left BMW. The GS80, in the meantime, had been with the engineering and became a budgeted official project called GS80, GS Gelände Sport.
You know, you've had an opportunity to walk around this museum that we're sitting in, and you see, of course, all of the history of BMW. You see the modern day BMW, and of course, the future is right around the corner. And I wonder, as a designer, how many of the components that make wonderful design occur do you feel have sustained themselves through the years?
Well, the answer is the 50 years, because it's not the designer. It is the changing of times, the changing of people.
Yeah.
What are they doing with their products? What are their demands?
Yeah.
What are the status of a car today? And what is the status of a gentleman who likes to have a hobby?
Yeah.
What is the status of traveling? And motorcycles became a kind of what a car can't do anymore. Motorcycle became the individualistic mobility factor. And this is what today. And I would say that the motorcycles you could put in different categories. There had been the racer types. There had been the kind of touring guy.
Yeah.
And there had been the ones which had been a kind of easy rider styles.
Yeah.
So this had been the categories, and the people seemed to be happy with these.
Yeah.
And then they started to make their own paint shops and to equip this and that. They became individualistic. What is left is the excitement to ride and possess a motorcycle, because this is the only one object which makes you free, because you can step out, you can go into the meadows, into the mountain area. A car can't.
It was really nice having the time to talk with you. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you.
We very much hope you have enjoyed this episode. We want to hear from you, so please rate, comment, and share your thoughts about this podcast. We have many more episodes on the way, so please subscribe, follow along, and share your requests for future episodes of the BMW Motorrad Ride and Talk Podcast.